Welcome to the Browner and Lawhead podcast. I am John Browner, joined as always by the one and only Jason Lawhead. He is in the building. He is present. His presence is a presence. And I am here with you on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. If you are listening, if you're driving in your car on your way to the Padres game, we got big talk for the four-game winning streak. Game starts around 6:40. So there's a lot to get underway before we get to that. Listening, liking, sharing, subscribing. You can do all those things on the iTunes podcast store and on YouTube if you're looking for the show. If you're new to the show, welcome. If you're a current and revisitor to the show, sit down, buckle up, because we got an interesting set of conversations for you. We're talking home runs. We're talking Padre win streaks, as small as they may be. And we're talking about weekend football and somebody and a local forced to sell their team in Arizona. Jason, what's up, brother?
What's up, man? It's my anniversary, so I'm
oh, whoa,
I'm feeling good.
Whoa.
Yeah, year three. Whoa. I'm year three in, my man. Yeah, and couldn't feel better, couldn't feel luckier. Probably wouldn't be sitting here with you today, obviously, had I not met her and made their drive down the 5 from L.A. eventually as we grew.
A woman to make you drive or fly anywhere.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm just lucky, dude. I don't know where this ship would have run aground in the last 8 years since I met her because she's made me just a better person, a more focused person. So here today because of her. I love my wife. Here's a shout out to you. She's working a little bit, but we're going to get off. She's going to get off early. We're going to go and have a nice dinner, Italian dinner tonight in Encinitas and celebrate. Ooh. And yeah, man. So feeling good.
When did you know? All right, I'm marrying this woman.
When she liked me? No.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it was. I think it was kind of early. I was still kind of like
knew early, or she knew early.
Well, she was into me, man, and she was younger, which, you know, and with the kind of with stand-up comedy, right? I've even before her, and she knows all my skeletons. She's accepted me for everything, but you know, they come and go, man, especially in stand-up when you're traveling. I was living in New York for a little bit at some pockets, just subleasing, L.A., working the road. And, you know, even some pretty young girls will come by. But, you know, it's like that's what, you know, they're into, maybe just like, hey, hooking up with a comedian or this will be fun. And
right.
But she wasn't that way. She didn't come up. She saw me perform, but she left after the show. She didn't come up to me after the show. She went and did a background check on me. She checked on, she had a friend who she worked with in the salon business, in the esthetician business, who's our good friends Nikki and Mike Vinn. She worked with Nikki, and she knew Nikki's boyfriend at the time. They're married now, but was manager, comedian, worked at the Comedy Store, still does. You know Mike Vinn. You've had him on the show. Yeah.
Shout out to
the Vins for kind of, you know, because she said, hey, ask Mike if he knows anything about this guy. And Nikki went home and she was like, hey, do you know? And Mike sang my praises. He's a Chicago guy. And he's like, oh, yeah, man, he's a great guy. He's a sports guy, really funny, great dude. And so that was the first good report. So she eventually reached out to me. And then I eventually was, you know, I was still, even when I was doing living in L.A., I was doing San Diego quite a bit because I had made some entrails here a long time ago when I first moved out this way. So, you know, I eventually made my way back maybe like a few weeks later to do a couple sets, and we came together. And I will say this, I'm not sure I can pinpoint when I knew I was going to marry her, but I do know this. I was in that time. I just gotten back from New York City. I was in that headspace of just being a comedian. I had a couple of friends with benefits going at the time on my phone. And I remember as I walked her out, we had a gentleman, the first night we met, she came to a show at the Comedy Store. We talked for hours after. I walked her to her car. We planned to see each other the next day or 2 days later. I think it was a Friday. We were going to go hook up on Sunday all day in La Jolla or whatever. And I gave her a little, you know, hug and a nice little gentlemanly kiss. And she drove away. And I remember as her taillights went, I went, you know, I don't know if I'll marry this girl, but I know she's worth getting rid of the other ones on my phone. And let me see, because I know she likes me. She wants to see me again. She went through all these little stages of checking on me, asking about me, reaching out to me. So I was like, this isn't just some chick that I met after the show, you know?
Right.
And it was a different vibe, and she had her stuff together. And so that Sunday, I eventually went over. She invited me to her place in Mission Beach, and I was spending the whole weekend down here. So I went over in the afternoon. I still had a show on Sunday night to do, so we were going to hang out in the afternoon. And maybe I'd go out back to her place afterwards if she was still up. So I went there, and she was just like on her floor. And this is probably like mid to late October, or early November of 2014. Well, it is 2014, I guess, 2014. But and she was putting a puzzle together on the floor of Lucille Ball. She's a huge Lucille Ball fan. So she had this like old soul, even though she was younger. And I was like, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I'm just putting this big puzzle of Lucille Ball. It was like it was the famous kind of mocking of Marilyn Monroe, where she came down the flight of stairs in the pink dress and all the tuxedo guys, and Lucille Ball kind of remade that photo. And she's like, yeah, I'm just gonna do this and frame it and send it to my aunt for, you know, Christmas. And I was like, oh god, I love this girl. That's kind of when I was like, oh wow, dude, I hit the jackpot.
I'm in.
Like, she's highbrow without, like, and so anyway, we got off track a little bit, but I brag about my wife. I'm proud to, like I said, I who knows where I'd be right now without her.
I guess we can tie that like this. Where would the Yankees be without Aaron Judge?
Exactly.
I gotta tell you, man, home runs are a weird thing. A lot of people talk about the 61 home run record. They tanked the 73 home run record because it went from a 40-year gap to, I think, a 60-year gap of guys, quote-unquote, legitimately hitting 60 home runs. And to have a bulk of time where a guy hit 63, 66, 66, 67, 70, 73 made it seem unnatural. Aaron Judge's home runs feel gargantuan.
Yes.
When Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa were hitting these home runs, freaking Brady Anderson leading off hitting 50 home runs, Jose Canseco, these guys were hitting bombs. And in that era, they just felt like another thing. It felt like just another guy hitting
Albert home runs. Bell, Manny Ramirez. I mean, there was a lot of them. List. I mean, there was platoon guys hitting like 28, 31. Yes. I
mean, Oppo.
Yeah.
So when Aaron Judge is hitting his 60th home run in a game that seems to appear to just be over, by the way, in the bottom of the ninth inning with no outs, down four runs, I think it was four runs, this guy hits a single home run, gets him to 60, and it just lit the stadium on fire. When I'm telling you, I'm not a Yankees fan. I'm not really that big of a fan of the quote-unquote home run. I mean, obviously you love home runs as a baseball player, but as a fan, but I'm not like wide-eyed over home runs. His home runs are not just home runs. And for him to get 60 and be hitting at average, to be leading the league in RBIs, leading the league in home runs by 20 home runs.
This guy's going
to
win the Triple Crown.
And on the verge of winning the Triple Crown in a season where he will hit 60 home runs.
Plus.
Right. This will go down as the greatest offensive season for an individual in the history of baseball. And Barry Bonds at 73 to me is real, but the average wasn't there. The RBIs weren't there. And his individual success did not basically keep that team afloat. And if it wasn't for Aaron Judge, the Yankees would be in an all-time meltdown as to where they started the season, the dip that they took, and he wouldn't allow that dip to stay low for long. This is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, individual season that any player has ever had in a game we've been playing so long, no one can really tell you when we started playing baseball. So my hat goes off to Aaron Judge. My hat goes off to the Yankee organization. Pay him, whatever he wants.
Well, that's the funny thing. They look like complete idiots right now.
Idiots.
And now the way they've threw that kind of offer at him, like take it or leave it in the beginning, that extension, and he said, you know what, I'm just going to kind of, you know, and then they kind of griped about how can you turn this down? We're the Yankees. We're the Yankees. And he was about to, and he looked at them and go, and was like, you're really what though? I mean, yeah, you just keep throwing money around to everybody. I mean, look at the contract you picked up for Giancarlo Stanton. And this guy, you know, strikes out constantly. So yeah, I mean, I don't even think they're going to be able to hang on to him even after this. I mean, they're going to probably say whatever you want. And he's probably going to go, you know what? It's too late. I won the Triple Crown. I hit 64, 65 home runs, whatever it is. And I'm from Northern California. If I'm going to take whatever offer you were throwing around in March, I'll tell you what, I'll let the Giants give me a blank check if that's where I want to be. If I don't know what's in his heart, but the way he talked at the All-Star break was like, we'll see, you know, like, and he's just bared down and gotten to the box. And like you said, we talked about it earlier. Like, if he's not there, they crumble. They're in third place because the way they came out of the gate in the second half, first off, they probably wouldn't have been as good as they were, you know, but even though they all played really well, but the way they came out in the gate in the second half, he was the only consistent theme through that. And yeah, he was the guy that eventually was able to be the building block to get that team back on track. So they didn't squander this thing and mm-hmm. totally blow one of the biggest leads at the All-Star break ever. But, you know, I don't know, man. I think he's just kind of like, hey, now the world has seen the Yankees, you know, he's a different kind, and he's done it really well with class. He's kept it close to the vest. He's just gone in there and dug into the box, and what a season. And you're right. I mean, when you put it all together and you sit back and you look from Ruth to Maris to the era that we just talked about with, you know, Brady Anderson and all kinds of guys hitting ridiculous amounts of home runs. And, you know, I'll never take away the great hitter Barry Bonds was. But when you look at all these guys, Sosa, Bonds, McGuire, none of them in the Hall of Fame. There is an asterisk to be said for the power numbers in that era. This is like, what did you say? Gargantuan? I love that word. Mm-hmm. And you're right. This is gargantuan. This is Ruthian, what he's doing. This is like the Yankees have Ruth and Gehrig at the same time in one guy. And, you know, they really played this thing wrong. Yeah, you know, they've got this guy going into October, and maybe he's enough with what they've got to win it all. We'll see. I mean, I don't know if they're built pitching-wise and defense-wise for the big stage against some good teams, Houston, you know, the Dodgers, whoever else is going to be mixing it up. But I love the guy, and I hate the Yankees, but he reminds me a lot of my childhood idol, which I only loved Reggie Jackson. I have his stuff. I don't care about the Yankees. My Indians just sunk, but he really reminds me of a guy like Reggie Jackson, who just steps up at the big stage. He carries that city and that team on his back. You know, the Yankees got Reggie when they needed him the most. The Yankees have Judge when they needed him the most. Obviously, Judge is a better hitter to all fields and all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, he could be their new next Mr. October, and they may lose this guy.
I'm looking at these home runs right now. And do you remember Luis Gonzalez?
Oh, yeah. What did he hit, like 58, 59?
In 2001, this guy hit 57 home runs.
57, that's right.
And never got close to that again.
Nope.
So,
I mean, Bonds is an amazing hitter. There's no doubt. Yes. He would have kept, like, if the era never, and Bonds got almost tricked himself into doing it because he saw these other guys getting away with it, putting up numbers that he was like, I'm better than
right.
I mean, McGuire, Sosa, give me a break, right? So he kind of got baited into that. And when you look at his numbers, but, you know, all of those power numbers are inflated to a degree. Would have Bonds hit into the 50s, you know, maybe flirted with 60?
Of course.
You know, there's no doubt he may have flirted with all that stuff. But, what Judge is doing, and, you know, he's the perfect baseball player for today's analytics, for the way today's velocity, you know, two times and through the lineup. Perfect. You know, he's the perfect robot, you know, machine you could build.
This story completely fits. This is how I know this was meant to be, because it fits in the small box. Because all those home runs were done by National League guys.
Yeah.
And so now you can literally give him this record as the only American League
right
hitter to do this since so-and-so. And I think that's Maris. What makes it fit perfect. It's comfortable. You don't have to include these other guys in this. It can be sterile. It can be kept as an American League thing, and everybody can push forward with that in the narrative. And I like it. I think it's good. I think it's healthy for the game of baseball to have a guy doing this at this point in time. And I really hope that he walks away with the MVP, because I really think it's deservedly so.
He's a shoe-in.
The Padres are now on their fourth game in a row with a win, 3 against mm-hmm. Arizona, 1 against St. Louis. And last night's game against St. Louis, you got a fantastic performance from Clevinger. And you pretty much 5-1 them joints. Or 5-0.
Yeah.
And so now you're coming into tonight, and you're looking for another good performance from Blake Snell. You're looking for another good performance from that offense. I've been telling people who have been down on Soto, the Soto trade was a bust. It was a failure. It's X, Y, Z. It's this, it's that. Anybody who follows baseball, there are ebbs and flows of baseball, whether it be team or whether it be the individual. Every single individual in baseball goes through a slump. You never know how long that slump's going to be. You don't know if they're going to go through multiple slumps, but they're going to hit a slump. And Juan Soto hit that slump. And in that slump, the Padres' offense kind of really struggled. They were winning games here and there, but it was kind of like, oh, this is a heavy pull. His addition, his couple of RBIs, his hitting in the last couple of games has made this look very smooth. This team looks ready. They look, for the first time in a long time, they're starting to look scary.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think I would say that about this team this year, because it's always been these two guys and then this guy, or this guy and then these two guys. Never everybody together at once. And for the last four games, we're starting to see everybody start to give a little bit, and you're starting to see the results on the scoreboard. Because these aren't 2-1 wins. These are 8s, 7s. Yesterday was a 5. So if they can come back against another good pitcher, because Adam Wainwright's a good pitcher. His pitch is slow, but nevertheless still a good pitcher. You come back today against Milnakis, and you put a 4, 5, 6 up against him, then I think this team is in a groove.
Well, I looked at last night's win, and I said pound for pound, when you look at the season and encompass the whole season right now for where everybody's at, where you want them to be, where you expected them to be, i.e. Clevinger, i.e. Soto, this was probably pound for pound up to date the most perfect win the Padres put out, you know, because it not just does it beats St. Louis, who's a division winner that they've had problems with in the past as they tried to build this group. What it does is, as you said, they beat a good pitcher. They scattered runs over innings. You know, they got a 2, a 1, a 1, a 1. They kept peppering that good pitcher, and they've got their guy Clevinger, i.e. where you want him to be, to throw the best probably outing he's thrown against the competition and what they're up against. Now, it's not just a win against St. Louis. It's a win that extends a winning streak when they need winning streaks, right? Soto's starting to get involved. And so I think pound for pound, and yes, tonight's a big start for Blake Snell. I mean, to be able to just, you know, even if you lost tomorrow, or even if, you know, you stumbled out on that game 3, if you can get one tonight from Snell, extend that winning streak, you feel good about 6 straight wins. You feel good about 2 arms that you're really going to need. I mean, you're going to need Clevinger and Snell to do anything, to even threaten anybody in the NL in October.
Right.
And you're going to need Soto to be the Soto that the Senators had. The Nationals had. I'm calling with the Nationals the Senators. But
Wow,
that's old. I mean, that's where, you know, so is this could be the best performance pound for pound this Padre team has put out.
And as I sit back and I watch this, I'm going to do my thing. I told y'all.
Mm-hmm.
I told y'all. I'm a told you so guy. Told y'all. Baseball is a long season. I think we have been so oversaturated with the way that the football coverage in America has now bled into other sports. And so you take a 162-game season and you try to compartmentalize that into a, like it's a football season. It's not. And so our coverage and our outrage about sports is now being based in a football sense. You lose three football games in a row, you in trouble. You lose three baseball games in a week, you might not even have a losing record for the week.
Yeah.
It's because that's just the way that the sport is tailored. And so I just kept preaching calm and kept preaching calm. They were above board the entire time. Mm-hmm. And so now you find yourself in a position where they're ready to rock and roll at the right time of the season. We've got 14 games left. All you need to do is go 500 within these next 14 games. Yahtzee.
Yeah.
You win. So we've got a lot more on the show. We're going to talk about Robert Sarver on the next side when we come back from commercial. We're also going to break down some of these weekend games as you guys are on your way to the Padres game. So stay tuned. Browner and Lawhead right here on the Mightier 1090, because you know we're the best show that you just found on the radio. Browner and Lawhead, Mightier 1090, ESPN. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Mightier 1090 ESPN with Browner and Lawhead. I'm John Browner, as always, joined by Jason Lawhead. It is Jason's three-year anniversary.
Yeah, number three. Yeah, we've been together about 8 years, coming up on 8 years next month. But yeah, 3 years. And yeah, it's been, you know, like I said, COVID jumped in our face quickly as newlyweds. We lost her father last year around this time and suddenly at a young age. So we've had our challenges. We've had some different courses we've had to take, but we've done pretty well. And, you know, the love is still stronger than it's ever been, which is the most important thing. So
Jason is celebrating that. We talked about on the first half of the podcast, the show, that Aaron Judge's 60 home runs and why his 60 seemed to be different than the steroid era or the home run era we went through in the late 90s, early 2000s. We talked about the Padres' four-game winning streak and their game that they're facing tonight. And some news broke about a local Robert Sarver, meaning you may know, may not know, is a local person here, owns a bank, by the way, here locally in San Diego. And he's been, I'm not going to say he was forced to sell the Suns, but he was left with no other alternative other than to sell the Phoenix Suns. For those of you who don't know, Robert Sarver is the owner, he's the majority owner of the Phoenix Suns, has been since 2004. And since 2004, he's been I don't want to say terrible person, but he's been socially childish for a very long time, as whether it be racially or sexually. Now, this isn't Donald Sterling bad, but this is as a 2022, we can't tolerate this moving forward bad. And so after I think it was a 2 or 3 year report that was compiled, it was finally released, in which he had been said to have been using the N-word and dropped his pants in front of coworkers and just a long list of things over time that you just can't do. And therefore, he was fined by the NBA. I think it was $10 million and suspended for a year from attending Suns games and Suns business. And then they started losing sponsors. And I think he came to the sense of, well, you know, at the end of the day, I'm going to get paid anyway. And as a rich guy, what difference does it make to me? Because he bought the team for $400 million. That team's worth more than $2 billion as of right now. According to Forbes, it's worth $2.1 billion. And so he's now going to make over a billion dollar profit off of a purchase, which, again, this is unfortunate, but I think it is a win-win for all parties involved. I think it's a win for Robert Sarver because he gets paid a fat ton of cash.
Yeah.
I think it's a win for the NBA because you get this guy out of your ownership group. And I think it's a win for the players because now I think Phoenix was always one of those destinations where people loved it. It's a vastly growing city. It's got a lot of good things happening for it. But the owner and his, let's call it what it is, his cheap way of running the franchise always forced guys to kind of shy away from playing for the Phoenix Suns. And now you read this report and you see why. You get this guy out and now all of a sudden everything, this is a win for all parties involved. And I think this will end up being a good thing in the long run.
Yeah. And I'll just say, and as you said, it is kind of it is as bad as Donald Sterling, because Donald Sterling set that to go, don't do that. Don't be that guy. Don't, you know, don't even come close to being that guy. So had Donald Sterling not already done something so egregious where, you know, you kind of sit back as an owner and you go, okay, look, man, you know, like, I got to grow.
If there was no Donald Sterling, he'd have been forced to sell the team.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, you know, I liken it to that in the sense that to me, because Donald Sterling had already set this out and you saw the ramifications from it, you know, you got to sit there and go, I got to grow as a person. I mean, these are older men. This is crazy. And his you know, statement of as a man of faith, I believe in atonement and a path to forgiveness. It's like, well, as a man of faith, you should have grown to a point at your age. I mean, you're not in your 20s or even 30s to be just kind of off the rails with power and money. It's like, you know, I mean, this is you are well into adulthood, and it's like you know, so path to forgiveness, atone for sins. We're not talking about something that happened 20, 30 years ago when you're trying to become a better man. Obviously you'd never put any of that work in. So what kind of faith do you have? It's such a, this, I go to church, I'm a good person, I go to church, I have faith, I believe in forgiveness, but you know, cancel culture is what it is. It's like, what psychotic kind of mind frame is that? So yes, the NBA is better off. Yes, the Suns are way better off that this happened way now before the season even starts. You know, and this thing didn't come falling down in December, January, or February when they're trying to, you know, make their run. And yeah, because I'll tell you what, if he didn't sell, there probably would have been a good chunk of ball players at some point that would have been like, I won't play. We won't play when we go to Phoenix. We're going to sit these games out against Phoenix like they did for certain other situations when it came to the George Floyd matter. I mean, there's a grouping of players that have the power in the NBA to go, nope, we're not going there. Or nope, I'm not playing against them. I'll sit out. Enjoy that, NBA. So it had to be done.
Can I just get one thing out of the way? And this is a personal thing, and I don't know how you feel about this. But as an adult, if you drop your pants in front of people, if you go around using the N-word under any circumstances where it's not used on an educational basis, which is very, very rare, please don't tell me how you're a religious person. I don't care, because you weren't that religious when you dropped your pants in front of these folks. And you weren't that religious when you was going around using N-bombs. And you weren't that religious when you was going around making sexual innuendos at people. So please don't tell me how religious you are now. Just stop. I hate it. That's one of these things where on the apology tour, at some point, either the woman wears a cross or the man goes, oh, I'm some religious. I go to church. I don't give a damn about what religion you attend exactly. If you committed these crimes or if you've done these atrocities that you've been accused of. I don't care, man. Because the religion wasn't there to stop you when you was doing these things.
Exactly.
You didn't go mid-pants drop and pull them back up and go, oh, well, you know, Jesus just put my pants back up or whoever you believe in. So please miss me with this whole, oh, I'm a man of faith. No, you're not. You better have faith that they pay you for this team. That's about the only faith you need to be having at this moment.
And they all use it. All these powers that be, they all use it. It's almost like they're only Christian to have the card to play. You know, it's like, wait a minute. If you're so Christian, how can you use your faith in such an insulting manner to be like, yeah, I acted like this through my 40s, 50s, and 60s, and I would keep acting like this too unless they came up with this report. Because my faith is going to make me better from this. And I thought that the commissioner should have just given me a year suspension. So I could have looked inward to my faith, which I've been doing for so long. Get the F out of here.
That's the one thing I don't want to hear it anymore. I don't. You can apologize. You can play the victim. You can do all these things without bringing your religion into
God,
it because it seems so disingenuous and so on script for people who do terrible things and want you to forgive them.
I'm a good guy. God I forgives. Go to church. That's what you hear.
God forgives. People don't. Move on, man. We got a fat slate of NFL games this week coming up. We're going to go through some of these games. We're going to break some of them down. I'm going to try to – let me get this up on the screen.
We got the big one tomorrow for me, obviously. Tomorrow night, we've got Steelers, Browns, both teams kind of reeling off of losses where, you know, one team looked like hot garbage, the Steelers, and the Browns just played hot garbage in the last 2 minutes. So I love the Browns in this one, obviously, at home. It's a short week. I think even with that choke job that happened – people are like, oh, how the Bears, the Browns again. Now, you know what? It was a set of a couple of circumstances. You know, the Browns right now on paper, better football players on both sides of the ball. Right now, they believe in their quarterback, even though he's the backup and he's the guy filling in. The Browns, it's not like the Browns choked away from the Jets because, oh, God, look what Jacoby Brissett just did. But where Pittsburgh, they're looking at a quarterback going, oh, God, is this guy – is he going to get worse or is he going to get a little better? Or are we going to have Kenny Pickett in the second half? What's Tomlin going to do? So I think all the circumstances line up for the Browns to feel way better about this matchup going into tomorrow at 1-1 and where they could be and where they've been standing since. You know, big game for Pittsburgh. Big game for Pittsburgh because even if they play well and get beat, you're looking at them. They're probably going to play well and get beat and only score 14 or 17 points. And if they don't play well and they get beat, they're going to get beat down probably pretty hard. And especially on that stat line, yards gained on the ground, you know, all those things that, Trubisky against that front with that offensive line, good luck.
I think this might be Mitch Trubisky's last game as the unquestioned starter for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I've watched both his games. Obviously, he was drafted by the Bears, so I have some interest in him. So I watch at other stops. And I got to tell you, man, he looks the same to me. He looks the same. So I think he is what he – I think he's going to be a great career backup. He could come in and win you some games replacing somebody. But I think this is an easy game for the Browns to win, and I'm looking forward to watching the Browns.
Let me tell you something. Yeah, the really easy game for the Browns to win is a forfeit. There's never an easy game for the Browns to win. If the Pittsburgh bus breaks down on I-76 crossing the border and never gets there, then it's an easy game for
the
Browns
one?
To win. Yeah.
Texans-Bears, not much to go over here. I think the Bears should beat the Texans. The Texans are giving up over 100 and like 60 yards on the ground so per game in the early first two games of the season. So I'm expecting the Bears to take care of them very easily.
Raiders, not a lot of marquee matchups this week.
But neither was last week, and look how it turned out.
Exactly. But I love that. I love that, I love that Bills-Dolphins matchup. Are you kidding me? That's going to be fun.
Let's just go down. Because Raiders-Titans is very important.
Yes.
The loser of this game will be in a lot of trouble. Now, the Titans may be in less trouble because of that division, but if the Raiders go to 0-3, they're done.
They're moving back to Oakland.
They're legit done. And so it'll be interesting to see the desperation that the Raiders play with versus the Titans, because the Titans have such good run offense, but the Raiders have such good pass rushers. I'm interested to see how that one turns out. What you think about that one?
Yeah, well, it's way huger for the Raiders because the Titans can, with a coach that's been there for a long time and players that have been in place, yes, going 0-3 is not what you want to do, but the Titans easily could write that ship. The Raiders at 0-3 in that division with Patrick Mahomes looking at me, forget it. Bye-bye. You're done. And the thing is the Raiders got to make the trip east. You know, they've got to play a team at home that's just kind of feeling like maybe this is good to be home. We'll get a win here. So this is probably, I hate to ever put a team in a make or break situation in week three.
It's early, but.
But I'll tell you what, man, the Raiders are going to be, that is going to be the longest stretch of game days if they can't win this game. And their next game is, who do they, if they go 0-3 here on the road, they've got, that schedule is not.
They've got in Denver, Kansas City, Houston, New Orleans.
Okay, Denver, Kansas City, though. You're 0-3 looking at those two teams, and you can't beat what's been on your schedule. You're in trouble.
And then we've got, now this game interests me because Kansas City is a 6.5-point favorite because the Colts have been so bad. the NFL works in mysterious ways. The Chiefs have looked fantastic for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The Colts have looked terrible for 2 weeks. And I wouldn't be shocked if the Colts won that game.
Yeah, well, I would. I, like I said, that's almost like the Chiefs would have to break down. The bus would have to break down from the hotel or wherever. I just think, you know, Matt Ryan, I mean, that last performance getting shut out the way they did. They're in a tie. They're 0-1-1, and it's one of the worst 0-1-1 records you could look at right now on paper. I think they've got a lot of work to do. I think the Chiefs are licking their chops, and I think, you know, they've not taken anything. This Chief team is focused this year. I think they've gotten a lot of the kind of just distractions, what they've needed to just empty out of that situation. Andy Reid, I think, has this team realizing, like, hey guys, we can't just go into the first 5-6 weeks like we have the last couple years because, you know, everybody's a Chiefs fan right now.
Right.
You know, I think they're playing with a chip on their shoulder. They're kind of playing like we should have had the last two Super Bowls in our pocket. So I think that's going to be a blowout. I think you
Dolphins.
Yeah.
Dolphins, Bills. Now, this game appears to be the laser light show of to start the season of so far. The Bills have been literally scorching people. They've been pancaking, avalanching, whatever term you want to use for blowouts. And the Dolphins, after this comeback against Baltimore, a lot of people are starting to wake up to the weapons that they have. Buffalo still on the road in Miami, a 6-point favorite. I like the Bills in this game because I think there's going to be a come to earth, come back down to earth moment for the Dolphins that I'm going to enjoy.
Yeah, the Bills are a better team. The 6 points is a good line, even going on the road against a team that is coming off that big win. I think I maybe would have liked the Dolphins a little better if that win against the Ravens wasn't so dramatic. If they didn't have to do so much to pull that game out so late and empty that tank, and you got a team kind of moving in on cruise control. But Dolphins at home. What the Dolphins has to do is they've got to get Buffalo's punter on the field a few times. I mean, you know, Buffalo, I mean, you know, they've got to be able to get some, you know, Josh off the field. I mean, because once they get to midfield or across, you've got 95 plays that can come right down your throat. And I feel almost like the 50-yard line is Buffalo's red zone. And, you know, once they cross it, they are just almost unstoppable. So if the Dolphins can't get them off the field and get that punter out there at least twice in the first half, they're in trouble. But if they can, they can maybe hang around that thing long enough.
A division game, Lions-Vikings. So I think only the Lions and the Vikings fans care about that one, so we won't spend much time on that one. Ravens-Patriots, which at one point in time would have been a great game. Now it's just kind of like a meh. Bengals, Jets, a lot of people are worried about the Bengals, who shocked everybody on their way to the Super Bowl last year. And a lot of people are shocked by the Jets actually winning a game last week. So, I mean, but there's not a lot of noise being made about that game. Eagles, Commanders. This one is a little more interesting to me because I feel like if Jalen Hurts is real, this will be an easy game. And Philly is a 6.5-point favorite.
Yeah, I like Philly's defense going at Carson Wentz, kind of like I like that Browns defense going at Baker Mayfield early and often. I think, you know, maybe Wentz will put up some second half numbers, but I like the Eagles getting out to a great start, especially defensively, getting the ball to Hurts in some good field position. And the Eagles are clicking, man. Like I said, I've liked them since early last year and just the way they've kind of grown as a team. So I'm excited about this Packers-Buccaneers matchup. As much as I, you know, don't even really enjoy watching these two quarterbacks, I do like watching them play each other.
So let's get to that. Let's get to that because in between that, it's Saints-Panthers, no thanks. Jaguars-Chargers, no thanks. Rams-Cardinals, which could be interesting because this is like a division game. It's a West Coast game. And after the way the Cardinals came back, they seem to have a little more life. And the way the Rams escaped may, you know, be interesting. Rams are favored by 3.5.
This is kind of a week of like this is like the battle of let's see who's for real in the Rams Cardinals game, in my opinion.
So Bucks, and then you got Falcons Seahawks, no thanks. And then Sunday night, 49ers, Broncos, which now becomes interesting because of Jimmy G. Mm-hmm. And then Monday night, you got the Cowboys, Giants, which again, we'll be back by that. So Packers, Bucks. This game, you know, this game seems interesting on paper, but in actuality, the Bucks are really, really, really banged up. And Mike Evans is now suspended. So this is going to be a very easy game for the Packers defense.
Yeah.
And again, on the defensive side of the game, the Bucks are banged up as well. Akeem Hicks is now out for 4 weeks with a plantar fasciitis injury. So I think the Packers are going to win this game, man. And I think it's going to be an easy win for them because the Bucks are just so banged up.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I look at that with Evans suspended. Even with him, Brady's been 10 for 31 on third down in those first two games. Yeah, he got the you know, the favor to play, you know, the Cowboys and then, you know, line up against a Saints team that just hasn't figured it out. Even though they've got a good defense, they were able to hold, you know, 20 points. You should win a football game if the other team has 20 points. The Saints couldn't do it. So I think Green Bay defensively sets the tone. And I just don't think right now Tampa Bay is where they – even that 2-0, man, they are not where they want to be.
Yeah, and it's – look, man.
It's weird. It's weird.
This weekend, this weekend with games, I think a lot of teams are really feeling the pressure. Like the couple of teams we spoke of, and I think a lot of teams are looking around going, this whole no plan in the preseason, I think it's hurting a couple of teams. I really think it's hurting Cincinnati. And I really, really think it hurt Green Bay because Aaron Rodgers seems to have no connection with his wide receiver so far. So we'll see, man. This weekend, again, we're not necessarily looking at it as some barn burner, huge matchup weekend, but there's some good divisional games like Bills, Dolphins. We didn't spend a lot of time on Lions, Vikings, but the Lions seem to kind of have everybody on their side now. So we'll see. We'll see you guys Monday with more results and more fun. Brown and Lawhead.
Go Browns!
Peace.
Peace.